Thank you, Pat. I'll write you a check tonight for being saying nice things about me. I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak to everyone today about our son, Mitchell, and his journey. It's been a very difficult road. And we've been humbled by the outpouring of love by PPMD staff and by many across the world who've offered support and condolences on our behalf. It's my hope that Mitchell's journey will ignite a conversation about Duchenne muscular dystrophy and its catastrophic outcomes. More importantly, that it'll ignite a new movement for better treatments and helping our boys that suffer. I'm going to break my address into three segments. One is a brief outline of his story. Second, I'll share with you some events surrounding his heart failure. And third, I'll share some lessons learned throughout that journey and some observations. I'm also going to show you two short videos that I produced just along the journey that kind of encapsulated some of what we were experiencing. Before I begin, I'd like to just acknowledge my wife, who is in every way my hero. And during the darkest moments, she was the strongest. It was astonishing to me how much she stood up and protected our son in every way that she could. She stood beside Mitchell every step of the way, and never did Mitchell feel alone during this difficult road. And so, Natalie, I just want to thank you. One more thing you should know about me is that I'm an unapologetic photojournalist by hobby. I average about 200,000 plus photos a year, and so you're going to see photos here that is life as it happened. I believe in photography being honest and not staged or contrived, and so you're just going to see snippets of our life, and I've done it with all my children, so all my photos aren't just of Mitchell, but of all my kids. And I have four beautiful children that I love with all of my heart. They are to me, as your children are to you, my life. Mitchell, my third child, is the one we'll discuss today. On April 29th, 2002, Mitchell was born in Salt Lake City, Utah. He was our third child and was a beautiful, healthy baby. Like all young parents, we were excited to introduce him to an enormous world filled with magic and wonder. Mitchell's early years were the same as the average child with DMD. He looked and behaved like a healthy child. He was a chubby, cute, sweet little baby. He did have some developmental delays that didn't have us terribly concerned because we didn't know any better. My sister, or Natalie's sister, who is a pediatric physical therapist, began to detect some of these delays. And by his third birthday, she had suggested we go to the hospital to have our son tested because we weren't seeing some things that should have been happening. The diagnosis. On July 25th, 2005, our world was turned upside down when we were told that our son had DMD. Our doctors had to tell us three times what it was before we began to comprehend the effects of DMD. I remember leaving the hospital horrified and brokenhearted. These photos were just moments after we were told what happened. Natalie's sister, who worked at Shriners Hospital, consoled Natalie, and as they walked to the car, I had to drive separately from work, so I just sat on the bench, and I just remember weeping, trying to figure out what was going on and how to handle what we were facing. This was the day Mitchell's journey began, as we know it. Upon Mitchell's diagnosis, he was given a weekend dose of prednisone. He responded well to the steroid with moderate irritability and occasional pale skin. He maintained very well, and it looked as though he would live or walk for many, many years to come. In fact, compared to his contemporaries, he seemed to do quite a bit better, the other children his age that had DMD. As a young child, Mitchell used braces to stretch his heel cords, as we're all familiar with. He didn't like them very much. He was a sweet-natured little boy and did everything he was asked to do. At least emotionally, it seemed as if he were engineered for this hardship because he had a remarkable tolerance for tests and procedures and pokes and prods. He never complained and always endured any battery of tests with a smile. Just before Mitchell turned four, he became a big brother. He was so excited to graduate from being the baby of the family to becoming a big guy on campus and show his little brother the ropes. There were many nights that Mitchell would sit at Wyatt's crib, his baby brother, and kiss his hand with love and affection. Life, in a tender twist of irony, would have his baby brother, not much longer, kissing Mitchell's hand as before he passed away. Not long after our youngest son was born, we had him tested for DMD, and we were relieved to know that Wyatt was free and clear. As much as possible, we wanted Mitchell to have a normal childhood. He was given chores, he was disciplined when he misbehaved, and he had lots of buddies. We would spend as much time as we could with him as a family. As he grew older, Mitchell underwent a variety of tests to benchmark mobility. He was doing very, very well. As far as we could tell, the years ahead looked promising and healthy. And as much as possible, we wanted Mitch to explore the world. On the shoulders of loving family, he was able to see far past his limitations. We focused as a family not on what he couldn't do, but what he could do. To Mitchell, his cup was always running over. He was a happy young boy. His appetite for adventure and activity was insatiable. There wasn't a body of water he didn't want to jump into. Every trip we went on, he would make sure with his mom that I had brought my swimsuit because he wanted me to swim with him. It was as if water liberated him and he could float and didn't feel the effects of gravity. But despite his appetite for life and adventure, Mitchell, of necessity, had to take the long road. While other kids could sprint across the park on their feet, he would come to know the reality many of us in this room have come to know, that the road for our boys is much longer and often more difficult and lonely. Last fall, Mitchell began to vocalize how much he wished he could be like regular boys and do what they did. We felt after our son, and our hearts broke quietly. That same evening, we took those difficult moments that could have been hard and depressing and made them beautiful. As long as he knew we were here next to him, holding his hand, he was safe, he felt happy. Mitchell placed great faith in a medical system that would keep him safe and healthy. Anything he was asked to do, he would do with exactness. Despite our efforts to keep him healthy, things changed. I will now discuss some of the events that surrounded his heart failure. When he was diagnosed in 2005, he was given prednisone. He had his first EKG as an early screening in 2010. There was a 2-year break. We were told that we didn't need to worry about it. He checked out. When he had a second EKG in 2012, it had been discovered that some serious deterioration had occurred. And we don't know when or how, what happened, but we know something happened in that period of time. I will now focus the rest of our attention on the last 10 months of his life. In late May of 2012, we learned that Mitchell's left ventricle was in serious trouble. Mitchell underwent a variety of tests to determine what happened and what we were dealing with. It would take about 7 months to understand that Mitchell's heart function was falling like a rock off a cliff. So we set out to give our son the best life we could. Friends rallied around him and offered surprises to cheer him up. We did all that we could to help him maintain a normal life. While Mitchell's prognosis was really unknowable, the velocity of his decline made any predictions difficult to make. There were breadcrumbs that, to the untrained eye, were almost invisible, indications that Mitchell's heart was failing, but we didn't know. We weren't educated. By the time Christmas morning had rolled around, Mitchell wasn't feeling well. We just thought he had a cold and needed some rest. Looking back, we can see that much more was happening. It wasn't until January, just a few weeks after Christmas, that we understood the true velocity of his decline. Let's watch a video.
Yeah, back in June, it was sort of the upper limit of normal, and then around Halloween, it was was high, despite the medicines, and we'll see where we are today. And that's, it doesn't, I mean, I don't need that number to tell me that his heart function is not very good, but what it can be helpful with is sort of gauging how well you're doing with your therapy.
Was just one of many videos I made along the way. I'm kind of a nerd, but I like to capture moments and create those types of things to help my family understand what we were dealing with. We'll just take a quick snapshot of Mitchell's EF decline. In May of 2012, it was discovered he had an ejection fraction of 25%. Then in October 31st, he was 21%, then 11%. And in November, and then 1st of January, he was 5%. It was happening very, very quickly, and we just didn't know what to do with it. He was asymptomatic. He showed no symptoms whatsoever during his experience until the middle of December. We didn't even recognize it until the end of January, but he was leaving little breadcrumbs in December that showed us it was, in fact, heart failure. So he was moderately sick in December. In January, he had a little event. He had called me in the middle of the night and said, "My heart feels funny." I ran upstairs to help him feel better, and it went away pretty quickly. And then a week later, he was admitted to the hospital for end-stage heart failure. Time was running out. If we could do this over again, we wish we would have been told, run. Do everything you can because you're running out of time. Winter had settled on us. It was cold, and in the frigid winter, we did all that we could to help Mitchell have a good life. Yeah, he got a puppy. He'd always wanted one of those. His grandparents brought them. This was something he's always wanted, a puppy to call his own, and his attachment to this puppy was almost uncanny. The puppy loved him, and it was almost mystical because that puppy, it was crazy until it got next to Mitch, and then it would just cuddle with him. It was a sweet, sweet moment. Just 2 days before we admitted Mitchell to the hospital, we took our kids sleigh riding. Again, Mitchell wasn't profoundly sick. He just seemed like he had a little cold. And he loved every minute of it. He didn't want to leave. Witnessed the last physical activity this little boy did in mortality. And it was more fun than just a treasured memory. We had no idea how this single experience would become such a treasured and priceless memory for us. Later that evening, our sweet son didn't want to eat. We had no idea what was happening beneath the surface of his skin and his warm smile. He sat there quietly. We offered a couple of different dishes, and he wouldn't take any of it. We just thought he just didn't feel well. The next day, his stomach hurt very badly. We called the hospital, and they suggested he had the flu. We knew better. In fact, I told the attending doctor my intuition that it was heart failure and that I wasn't very interested in his opinion. As any good doctor knows, a parent's intuition is a very powerful data point. He said, follow our intuition, which we did. So we packed our bags and took our son to the hospital. Mitchell became more and more listless. We thought perhaps Mitchell would be there for a day or so that doctors could write him up and get him better. We had no idea. As Natalie checked him in, Mitch and I sat in the waiting room. He had such a sweet demeanor. I loved every moment I had with him. As the nurses and attending doctors in the emergency room checked his vitals, things went from routine to rigorous and brisk. As we sat there, we saw a visible decline in Mitchell's countenance. He was crashing. They rushed him to the CICU, and with a flurry of activity around him, Mitchell was confused and scared. About an hour after Mitchell was settled into the doctor's room from the ER, the DR doctors came up to see if Mitchell even survived. They were relieved knowing that he was still around, but they had no idea what was really happening. It didn't take long before Mitchell's medical team had a handle on things. They were able to stabilize him with milrinone and a heavy dose of diuretics, but the news was not good. X-rays would reveal that he had a greatly enlarged heart, and the words panic took on a new meaning. We did all that we could to help Mitchell feel safe and that everything was fine. It was his nature to worry, and we didn't want him to be stressed over a reality over which he had no control. We wanted him to be a little boy as long as possible. But soon, life would require him to grow up much too quickly. So his CICU room became a second home, and we did all that we could to keep him happy. There was never a shortage of giggles or teeth in our home. Mitchell's aunt, the one who helped him get diagnosed at such a young age, was there by his side also. They had a special bond. As we tried to wean him off milrinone, he got very, very sick, and doctors realized he would need to be on it the remainder of his life. We were grateful that Mitchell's cardiologist had a powerful blend of competency and compassion. When revealing to us that Mitchell likely had days left, he was fighting back the tears. So were we. His loyal mother never left his side. Each night, as Mitchell drifted off to sleep, she would try to capture just a few minutes for her. Because the doctors knew Mitchell's time was running out, they made an exception to the hospital rules and let his puppy visit him. Little Marley, his faithful puppy, would always cuddle right next to him. He loved every second, and it was medicine for the heart and soul. We were grateful. Touch was also another powerful medicine for him. We learned a little bit about that yesterday. Mitchell's neurologist, who had diagnosed him at the age of 3, knowing he was about to die, came to visit him and give him some love. Going there was not easy for her daughter had passed away just a few years prior. And the pain she was experiencing and the loss she had experienced was tender. Yet she loved Mitchell more than her personal comfort. Her visit to him made him feel good, and we were grateful. While we can get caught up in chemistry and biology, this image shows the nobility of compassionate medicine. We reached a point at the hospital there was nothing they could do. I had asked them if there was anything they were doing there that we couldn't do at home. They said no, and when asked what we wanted to do, I said I wanted my son out of that hospital by 5 p.m. After catching their breath, they put things in motion. We were out by 8 p.m. As we rushed out the door, Mitchell was so excited. No longer tethered by cables and IVs, he wanted to reclaim his life. That was the longest drive in our lives because we knew this was a one-way trip. When we arrived home, we found the streets leading up to our house and all around us were wrapped with yellow ribbons. Loving neighbors wanted us to know that they were thinking of our sweet son. Mitchell was glad to be home. His spirits were up, and he was back to his usual cute, funny, happy self. He enjoyed playing board games, Uno, video games, and watching movies. At his request, we had an early birthday, and some of his closest friends attended. He was a little boy again, and that was the best gift we could give him at the time. Mitchell had several Nerf gun wars with his friends and family, one of his favorite things to do. He had a commanding personality about him, and his friends always followed his loving lead. He was a gentle leader, and they loved him. As each day passed, his strength did too. Each day, he became weaker and weaker. But that didn't stop us from helping him feel safe and secure and giving him hugs and kisses that he wanted all the time. Simple tasks became nearly impossible for him to accomplish. His perfusion lowered. As it lowered, he became more emotional, and simple tasks became almost impossible. This descending reality made managing information for him even more difficult and delicate. Finally, on his third week at home, as much as he wanted to play, Mitchell didn't have the strength to do much. His last Nerf gun war lasted 2 minutes. Then his mother took him back to his room Mitchell never left again. Because his heart was in a state of serious decline, and in a last-ditch effort to help him have a little more time, our cardiologist approved a very small bump in his milrinone dose. Instead of helping him, it hurt him. Mitchell became very tachycardic. He was never the same. Our son started to slip away. We were fortunate to have a family photo taken by a stranger who had been watching Mitchell's journey. He wanted to do it, and he did his best to smile. After this photo, he drifted off to sleep and didn't seem to emerge much after that. Then the end came, and our hearts were broken. We had to come face to face with some very harsh realities. And emptiness filled our hearts. Last spring, after we learned of Mitchell's heart condition, I started a Facebook page with the intent to help close friends and family keep tabs of what was going on in his life. It wasn't my practice to impose my personal situation on anyone's life so they were free to follow or ignore at their leisure. We didn't realize the effect this Facebook page would have. The symbology of Mitchell's journey was described in a letter I wrote to my family when he was first diagnosed, and I referenced an abyss. 7 years later, I made another reference to that same abyss. I'll read that quickly. This was in November now, just after we learned he was in serious trouble. Today, Natalie and I sit with Mitch on the edge of an invisible cliff. He can't see it, but my wife and I can, and the mouth of that abyss is yawned and inching to devour our son. Yet Mitchell looks out into the vast horizon, unaware, and envisions a long, bright future ahead of him. In his little mind, he's already making big plans. He wants to build a home next to ours with a tunnel connecting our basements so his dad and him can watch movies and make popcorn. He wants to work for his dad when he gets older, and he talks about his own kids one day and how he'll hope to raise them like we raised him. As he points to his vision of the future with youthful enthusiasm and a zest for life, he doesn't realize that he sits on the outermost edge and the ground from under him is crumbled away into the darkness, and his little body is hanging by a pebble. What Mitchell doesn't understand is the beautiful horizon he sees is only a mirage, and the reality is the sun is setting on his own life. To our great surprise, Mitchell's page began to see a spike in followers as Mitchell was admitted to the hospital. During our darkest moments, I posted various musings on love and loss. I wasn't trying to become an armchair pontiff. I was just a broken-hearted father trying to sort out my way through a labyrinth of pain and love. But these somehow had a connection with people, and they began to follow. The impact of Mitchell's journey had a global impact. This map really doesn't do it any justice, but it was fascinating to see dense populations start to follow Mitchell's journey and become very active in talking about him. Some examples, we had runners in Australia reach out and start running with Mitchell pitcher on their backs. Articles in Russia, politicians at the House talking about Mitchell and DMD, graffiti in Europe, Israel, local community gathering behind Mitchell in his journey, people in Reno, people that had read essays and started to post things on the refrigerator that Mitchell had said. This is a recent, somebody had just sent this on a run, remembering Mitchell. Even artists were putting together art of all kinds, and this was a dance in honor of Mitchell and his journey. This school, this community, had actually, we're not a part of or associated with, had choreographed a dance in honor of Mitchell and are donating some of the revenues from that performance to PPMD. So they're trying to create awareness, and which was really exciting because none of them had been affected by Mitchell, or excuse me, by muscular dystrophy. I had many people reach out over time asking for permission to share in various classes and discourses parts of Mitchell's journey, and so muscular dystrophy had really elevated, became a major talking point for a lot of people. At home, even Mitchell's reach had no less an impact. Every time I go to his school to pick up my other son, I see kids wearing T-shirts with Mitchell on them. One of Mitchell's classmates said in his year-end essay about what he learned from the year, he said this, "My least favorite part about fifth grade was losing Mitch. He was one of my best friends and always hoped that he would pick me for recess. He was great at Uno, and when he would make us draw cards or win, he would laugh his little laugh and keep on playing. When he got sick, it was very hard on me." This is a 10-year-old, okay? I felt like part of me is missing and that there is a gaping hole gone in me that, and today, I still feel it. But I wouldn't have traded this fifth grade experience for anything. The thing with Mitch that changed me the most, he helped me to learn to push on and keep going. When I look up to someone, I will always think of Mitch. I think before I wrap up, I thought it would be important to mention that the medical community was surprisingly impacted by this. I had a letter from somebody in California that just sent me this. She said, "After my daughter's kindergarten physical, we went to Jamba Juice. While in line, Emma started frantically pulling my hand and jumping like crazy, pointing to three men. One of them was the doctor for her specialist group. We said hello. Then she yells, 'No, Mommy, look.' It wasn't the friendly face she was excited about. It was the laptop they were all staring at, a laptop with Mitchell's journey on its screen. 'See, Mom, they know Mitchie.' An hour and 23 minutes later, there were 11 people wiping their eyes in deep discussions on how doctors and administrators could lobby for more research and understanding and funding to figure out how to help these kids." So Mitchell's journey had an impact. I've had many, many letters from physicians to surgeons to various doctors who have all said, "I will practice medicine differently because I can see a different side of things." Politicians, educators, parents, even kids, the rising generation have also been impacted, which we are grateful. We're hopeful that it'll help. Just very quickly, lessons learned, for us anyway, was to laugh often, to take as many opportunities, as much as we wanted to sit in a corner and cry, to take opportunities to laugh. That we realize that burdens can be blessings, that sometimes our most difficult experiences are the most beautiful looking back, and that moments are fleeting, and take advantage of them. Never underestimate the power of touch. That's one thing Natalie did beautifully. She's always there, caressing and helping this little boy feel safe. I wish I was a baby, because then she would cuddle me that way. So when I act like a baby, she tells me to leave. So. Lastly, time changes things. Last year, we took our kids to the movies, why it was pushing Mitchell. This year, about the same time, without realizing it, we had that same experience, and I just saw Wyatt crossing the street, that same crosswalk, without his brother. It was a sobering moment. But always take advantage of the opportunities. And for those of us who have children with DMD, my recommendation is get your camera out. And as often as you can take pictures, take them. Take them like a paparazzi. And when you've taken 100, take 300 more, and you won't regret it. Digital pictures don't cost any money, and you'll be surprised that those accidental photos are the most precious. This was not staged. This was Natalie in my office giving Mitchell a kiss, and I just quickly grabbed my iPhone and started taking pictures. And there's a really beautiful sequence here. This is the one I've published. Lastly, I just want to address the human cost. This will be my closing thoughts. I have 4 children, 3 boys, that I love so much. I believe Mitchell's journey has helped make visible a relatively overlooked and invisible disease by the community at large. It has drawn focus to the profound human cost that muscular dystrophy has on families, and I hope it ignites this a new level of effort that will save other families the same hardship myself and others like Pat and many others have experienced. Lastly, I'll just share a quick video and then a closing thought.
When you try your best but you don't succeed, when you get what you want but not what you need, when you feel so tired but you can't sleep, stuck in reverse, and the tears come streaming down your face, when you lose something you can't replace, when you love someone but it goes to waste, could it be worse? Lights will guide you home and ignite your bones, and I will try to fix you. To let it go, but if you never try, you'll never know just what you were. Lights will
we will spend the rest of our lives doing all that we can to help.